Good evening and welcome to this live telephone town hall with your state lawmakers, Senator Sam Hunt, Representatives Lori Dolan, and Beth Dolio. My name is Andy. I'm going to be your host tonight, and we are calling you tonight because this is day 25 of the 105-day legislative session, and your lawmakers want to give you an update on how the session's going so far and to answer any questions you might have on the issues currently being discussed at your state capitol. To ask your lawmakers a question tonight, all you need to do is press star 3 on your phone. That's star 3, and we will put you in the question queue. Again, we're calling you tonight because your lawmakers want to hear questions you have on the issues that are important to you. If you have a question for Senator Hunt, Representative Dolio, or Representative Dolan tonight, all you have to do is press star 3 on your phone right now, and we will get you in the queue. Now I'll turn it over to your lawmakers for some opening remarks.
Thank you. This is Senator Sam Hunt in my new role as a state senator after a number of years in the House of Representatives. I'd like to thank all of you for calling tonight. And just a quick thing, as we said, we're on the 25th day. I'm serving on the State Government Committee in the Senate, which deals with a lot of elections, public disclosure, ethics, and other issues. I'm the ranking Democrat on there. And I also serve on the Human Services, Housing, and Mental Health Committee. So look forward to your questions tonight.
Good evening. This is Lori Dolan, and I'm in position one as your representative in the 22nd Legislative District. I actually come to this job from 30 years of public education, K-12 education, and then I spent 4 years as Governor Gregoire's policy director. So coming into this job, I have a lot of background, a lot of knowledge about state government. But being in a new position, I'm trying to learn all the pieces I don't know. I was saying to somebody the other day, it's kind of like being dropped in a land where the language is foreign and you're trying to learn the language. And so I always know who I can go to ask for help. And I have to tell you, the one thing that has been the most delightful about this is I did not realize how I was actually in this job, what a privilege it is to actually give voice to those who have a story to tell but haven't been able to tell their story. And that's probably my favorite part of the job so far. I serve as vice chair of the Education Committee, vice chair of state government, and I'm also on the Finance Committee, and look forward to answering your questions.
And I'm Beth Dolio. I am in position 2 in District 22, and I'm really enjoying serving with Senator Sam Hunt and Representative Lori Dolan. I come from a background, I worked for Climate Solutions, working on climate policy region-wide. For the last 10 years, I've worked on women's reproductive health issues and have volunteered in a variety of capacities in the human services sector, parks, and issues along those lines. I have the privilege of being the vice chair of the capital budget. I serve on labor and workforce standards and technology and economic development.
Great. Thank you for those introductions. Again, just a reminder to those on the call, if you want to press star 3 to ask your lawmakers a question, again, this is a live telephone town hall with your state lawmakers, press star 3 on your phone right now, and we will get you in the question queue. The first caller we're going to go out to tonight is Ruth, who's got a question about school funding. Go ahead, Ruth. You're live with your lawmakers.
Thank you. I've been reading in the paper about some funding proposals for school funding, which I think comes from the Republicans and appears to be very, very inadequate. I am hoping that you come up with a better proposal to do adequate funding for the schools so that we can meet the court requirements but also meet the needs of the students.
Yeah, this is Sam. We passed, the Republican Senate passed a very sketchy, very bad education funding bill last night that would cut education funds for 605,000 of the 1.1 million students in Washington schools. It would basically eliminate teacher certification so that you could hire just about anybody to teach, and it would gut the collective bargaining law for teachers. It would eliminate levies for 1 year with maybe some way to do it, you know, to replace those monies, but It's really a very bad bill. More than half of the school districts and half the students in the state would come up as losers, including the McCleary family district. The McCleary family filed the lawsuit. Their district would be a loser in this Senate proposal.
This is Lori Dolan, and as I mentioned earlier, I serve on the Education Committee. But the piece that we need to remember is that each one of our children in Washington State, no matter where they live, whether they live in a small town or a big city, deserve an excellent education. They deserve, for teachers and classrooms, they deserve a good curriculum, and they certainly deserve to have their education fully funded. And that's what we are all about this year in the Democratic Caucus of the House. We are here to fully fund education. We've talked about it for years. All the studies are in place. We know how much money it's going to cost, and now we are all about trying to find the right amount of money to fully fund education this year. There's no more time to waste. It's time to get it done.
Excellent. Thank you for that question, Ruth. Again, if you've got a question for your state lawmakers tonight, *3 is all you have to do to be put in the question queue, and we will get you in the line. Again, that's *3 on your telephone right now. Next, we're going to go to DeFrance, who's got a question about the state employee contracts. Go ahead, DeFrance. You're live with your lawmakers.
Well, thank you for taking my question. I want to ask all three of you whether you support funding for the employee contracts that we bargained.
How are you, DeFrance? Good to hear from you. Absolutely. I think all three of us are steadfastly in support of the collective bargaining agreement and in maintaining and strengthening the collective bargaining law in the state of Washington.
Yes. This is Representative Bellio. Absolutely.
And this is Lori Dolan. Absolutely. You know, I think what people might not realize is here in the 22nd Legislative District, state employees are a backbone. They're our economic development. They are the people who keep state government running. And if they are doing well, then the rest of us are doing well. Small businesses do well. So getting those contracts supported is really important to all of us.
Before we have another question, did you have something?
No.
I want to just add that Monday in the House Appropriations Committee, there will be a hearing where the Senate Republican funding proposal and the House Democratic proposal for dealing with funding K-12 education will be addressed and compared. I think that'll be at 3:30 Monday for any of you who want to check that out. That'll be a good opportunity to see the two plans side by side.
Great. Thank you for that. Again, folks, *3 if you've got a question tonight. That's *3 on your phone right now, and we'll get you in the queue. As we have more questions coming in, I'm going to ask Representative Dolio, would you like to talk about your legislation that you just testified on a few days ago about the GRUB program, a program here that's local to Thurston County, and what you're trying to do with that program statewide?
Yes, I have sponsored a bill that would take the wonderful program that we have created here, a locally grown program called GRUB, that takes kids who might be struggling in a traditional setting in high school and put them to work growing food. It's had such tremendous success here in Thurston County that we want to share that bounty with the rest of the state. I've got a bill here that would sponsor 5 pilot programs throughout the state to replicate this program. And there would be some metrics kept to kind of look at what kind of impact this has in different communities. We know that it has been such a good addition to our school system here and our community here in terms of taking kids who might be at risk or are not thriving in the traditional setting and really helping them thrive. And so providing opportunities like this for the rest of the state would be a really great thing to do, and I've sponsored a bill to see if we can make that happen this year.
Excellent. Thank you for that. Again, *3 if you've got a question for your lawmakers tonight. Next, we are going to go out to Nancy, who's got a question about the COLAs. Go ahead, Nancy. You are live with your lawmakers.
Hello. I'm interested in House Bill 1484 and Senate Bill 1560 to restore COLA to PERS 1 and PERS 1 people. Do you have any idea what the chances are of that passing and where it is now?
Hi, Nancy. This is Lori Dolan, and I'm the prime sponsor of House Bill 1484. And when I started out the conversation saying what a privilege it is to give a voice to people who need their voices to be heard, what I was thinking about is the PERS and PERS 1 COLA. For those of you who aren't teacher or state employee retirees, about 7 or 8 years ago, the state of Washington quit giving our eldest retirees any kind of cost of living adjustment, even though retirees from plans 2 and 3 were getting COLAs, the people from plan 1 were not. Many of those people had been living on $14,000 a year, and it's getting harder and harder to make ends meet. And so what 1484, this bill does, is it would give them for 1 year an opportunity to get $2 per year of service. So if I taught 25 years, I'd get $50 a month added to my paycheck, and then $100, $150 for 1 year, which would catch them up a bit. Whether or not this is going to be able to be funded, that's a big question, because right now we're looking at all sorts of needs, and this is one of them, and we need to figure out how we're going to finance all the different things we have on our wish list. This COLA is high on my wish list. I'm hoping it can happen, and we'll see what we can do with the Finance Committee and our budget when it comes out, and we'll see how the public responds to that.
Great. Thank you for that question. Again, if you have a question for your lawmakers tonight, just press *3 on your phone right now, and we'll get you in the queue. Next, we're going to go out to Jamie, who's got a question about health care. Go ahead, Jamie. You're live with your lawmakers.
Hello, this is Jamie Smith from Lakewood, Washington, and I wanted to know what were you guys going to do about the high cost of prescriptions, and I know the as far as the health care stuff or like Obamacare is going to change, but is there any plan of what is to come?
Well, this is Lori Dolan again, and when I get this question, now none of us none of us are on the healthcare committees, but I will tell you what I say to constituents when they ask me about this. Right now, I think our energy needs to go to putting all sorts of pressure on the federal government to keep funding healthcare. We have, I think it's 150,000, I can't remember how many exactly. We have thousands and thousands of Washingtonians dependent on Medicaid funding, and it's up to the federal government to keep that money coming. And the governor has done a lot of press conferences about this lately. We really need to keep saying to our new president that this is important. The Affordable Care Act is important. It impacts people living here in Washington, and we need that money.
We'll do all we can in Washington to try to protect that health care and the exchange that we set up and the other programs so that children, families, seniors can have access to the health care that they need. We need to expand it, not contract it.
We actually just all signed a letter 2 days ago that went to President Trump, putting ourselves on the record of how important this money is to Washington State.
Excellent. Thank you for that question. Again, *3 if you've got a question for your lawmakers tonight, and we'll get you in the queue. Next, we are going to go out to Bill, who's got a very frequent question on these forums about state lottery dollars. Go ahead, Bill. You are live with your lawmakers.
Yes. My name is Bill from Melinda, Washington. And years back, I voted for the lottery. My family did, and everybody else that I knew did also. Only because they're told that it was going to the schools, and strictly to the schools. Is it going to the schools, or where is it going right now?
Okay, well, there are a couple of misperceptions here, I think, Bill. First of all, the lottery was not adopted by the people. The lottery was adopted by the legislature in 1981, when we had a fiscal crisis, sort of the measure that we had in 2008. And that money was designed for the general fund. The lottery is a very, very small part of the state budget. In a good year, we may get $200 million out of the state lottery in a budget of over $30 billion. That's with a B. We have, however, redirected lottery money in recent years to where it has gone to scholarships and school construction. And that's where the lottery money goes today, for higher ed scholarships and for some K-12 construction.
One thing on the lottery money, I'm on the capital budget, and the House Capital Budget Committee is looking at a plan to utilize lottery money to help fund school construction, and making that nexus more clear between our lottery dollars and schools. And so that's one thing that we're looking at, and we'll be able to bond against the lottery dollars. So, but it's a bill. It's actually Drew McEwen, who shares it, whose district borders our district, and he's playing a leadership role on that.
Great. Thank you for that question. Again, *3 on your phone if you've got a question for your lawmakers. Next, we're going to go out to Betty, who's got a question about homelessness. Go ahead, Betty. You are live with your state lawmakers.
Hi. I'm out here in Bellflower, Washington, and I would like to ask, what efforts are you making to help our homeless and mental health people that need so much help, especially in these small towns? I would like to ask, if there's people that are helping them, where would we go to find help for these people if they can't do it themselves?
Great question. Thank you for asking that. This is Beth Dolio. And there are two vehicles right now that we are working on. A lot of money that comes into our local communities is raised through a document recording fee at the time of the sale of a house. And that bill actually sunsets. And so we are working on an effort to take the sunset away or extend it into the future, and also slightly increase the fee, the document recording fee, so that we can actually infuse more money into services for those who, for some reason or another, find themselves in distress and without a home. This is very important money for our communities. I had about 25 people in today that were advocating for this bill. It was the largest group of people that I've met with yet this session for organizations that do lobby days. And it ranged from everyone who was receiving assistance through shelters or subsidized housing to people who were providing those to family members of those who needed additional help. So it was a really great group of people to hear from, to hear their stories from, and to learn about what is really facing folks who find themselves in those situations. The other piece, again, on the capital budget, there is a housing trust fund that does have, it's a pot of money, depending, it's kind of different each biennium in terms of how much is put into that. The folks who are advocating for homeless folks are asking for $200 million, and I'm going to do everything I possibly can to make sure that housing trust fund has as much money as we can have, because, as you know, we can put all the money in the world into our school system, but if kids are joining us from the car that was cold last night that they spent the night in, or sleeping somewhere where they're not comfortable and it's not in their own home, they're not coming to school ready to learn. And so we can't just put money into McCleary and into the schools. We really need to make sure that we find money to make sure that folks have a safety net when they happen to have an unfortunate situation and find themselves without a home. So I appreciate you having that concern. I think the best place for you to go in your community. It sounded like you were from Belfair. I would start with the county, and because a lot of times the state funds move directly through our counties, and that would be a good place to find where the resources are in your own community.
And just as an example, the new apartment complex down by the transfer station in Olympia is being built with housing trust funds by the low-income housing group, and Quixote Village got a fairly good infusion of money when we built Quixote Village. So we have put a fair amount of money, not enough, but a fair amount, into housing there in Drexel House and other places in the Olympia Lake Tumwater area.
Great. Thank you for that question. Again, *3 if you've got a question for your lawmakers tonight, and we'll get you in the queue. Next, we're going to go out to Janice, who's got a question about foster care. Go ahead, Janice. You're live with your lawmakers.
Hi, this is Janice Razee. I'm from Olympia, Washington. I have a question about flu shot requirements. We lost 200 homes when we made that a law that foster parents are required to have flu shots with children 2 and under. And I was wondering if you guys have thought about repealing that. There's many wonderful homes that are very well qualified to care for these infants, but you know, if we have teens who refuse to take the flu shot, it kind of doesn't make sense. These babies often go into the community with their parents and their social workers and daycare, and it's almost like it doesn't, it seems a little strange, you know. Just want to know if that was something that you guys could look at.
Hi, this is Lori, and we're all looking at each other. None of us actually are aware of this particular issue. You can find my email online, and I would encourage you to write me tomorrow, and I will get you an answer. Actually, I can give it to you right now. It's lori.dolan@ledge.wa.org. I'm sorry, G-O-B. And so if you want to give me, you know, send me an email, we'll get an answer to you on that.
And for the other callers that are on the phone, your lawmakers, all of your lawmakers' email address are their first name dot last name at leg.wa.gov. So that's a good reminder for those. If you don't get to answer your question answered tonight, you can certainly write your lawmakers at that email address. Again, *3 if you've got a question tonight. And next we're going to go out to Laura, who's got a question about the new market program out there. Laura, go ahead. You're live with your lawmakers.
Oh, hi. I didn't know I was supposed to talk to them. I not only wanted to say something great about Grub, but I also wanted to say something great about Newmarket. My son graduated as one of the first graduating classes from Newmarket 41 years ago. Or not 41 years ago, but he's 41 now. So when Newmarket finally had a program, he graduated from there and very proud of it. And we need more things like Grub and Newmarket around the state. Not so many of these, what do you call them, charter schools, but I wanted to know what you thought about that. Because I had kids go to college, I had kids not go to college, I had kids go to college later, but the... For me, it was more a part of my children learning. And they were.
Thank you, Laura, for your question. We're having a little technical difficulty, and just I'm sorry you got cut off there. But I'm really familiar with Newmarket. It's a fabulous program. In fact, my son took advantage of a summer course there in cooking. Which he really enjoyed and had a really great time and came home a much better cook. He knows how to use a knife in a way that I never learned how because he had that cooking class. And, you know, he also was a person that, you know, traditional art school really didn't work for very well. And he was able to take advantage of Running Start, which, of course, is a program that the community colleges offer, I think, quite a few places in the state, but we're lucky to have that here at South Puget Sound. So, I, too, am a very big fan of, you know, offering kids a variety of different options. Not everybody learns in the same way. Not everybody is going to be, you know, doing the same things as an adult, which is what makes our world go around, because everyone has different skills to bring, different ways of learning and looking at things. And so having an education system that does that is something that's very important to me.
You know, this is Lori, and I'm going to actually jump in on this question as well. You mentioned charter schools, and that's kind of a politicized hot topic right now. And as I shared at the beginning, I spent my life in K-12 education. And over the years, I had the opportunity to work with parents to develop a multitude of alternative kinds of programs within the public schools. Not all kids are the same. They're different, and not one size fits all in terms of education. So for public education to develop alternatives is a really great thing. It does not have to happen outside of public education. And when you take it out, when you take public money outside of public education and privatize it, the problem is you don't have a school board, a publicly elected school board, overseeing how that money is used, making sure you have good teachers in classrooms and good curriculum being taught. And so I'm a fan of alternative education. I don't care what you call it, whether you call it charter schools or not, but it has to be under the umbrella of an elected school board.
You know, I think one of the things of having a new superintendent of public instruction in our own Chris Raichdahl, Chris plans to emphasize not only going to college, but going to other types of schools, be it Newmarket, be it the community colleges and the trade schools, because we have a wealth of opportunity out there for people to get trained, and not everybody wants to or needs to go to college. I often say I can find pages of attorneys, nothing wrong with you attorneys who might be listening. But once you find an auto mechanic or a plumber or something, we tend to hold on to them because it seems much harder to find somebody who is trained and wants to do that job. And we need to boost those areas as well in our economy.
Great. Thank you for that question. Again, *3 if you've got a question for your lawmakers tonight, and we'll get you in the queue. Next, we're going to go out to Janine, who has a question about getting young people more involved in politics. Go ahead, Janine. You're live with your state lawmakers.
Hi, this is a good follow-up question, I think, to the last one. I know a group of incredibly energized kids who just came off of an action weekend last weekend with the Legislative Youth Advisory Council, which exists to engage kids with the legislature and political lawmaking. I think that maybe some of you met with them last Monday,
yes.
But I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the lack of civics education in schools, really educating kids into the political process, which seems so important right now, and whether you could be proponents, possible heroes, to help get their Legislative Youth Advisory Council under the wing of the Lieutenant Governor's Office, so that it could be funded, and they do education for hundreds of kids across the state as well. So I'm wondering about your thoughts on that.
This is Lori, and I just actually dropped a bill called House Bill 1896, Civics Education, a couple of days ago, and it's really a curriculum that's been designed over the years by the League of Women Voters, and they were working in conjunction with Superintendent Chris Raichdahl at SPI, who also is working on a civics education bill. So right now there's two bills, I think, that are going to be actively discussed in the next week having to do with this. You know, I think the past couple of weeks, we have all realized there's a lot of pent-up energy to be part of our American democracy, and it's great that our kids are excited about that and want to be part of it, and we need to give them every opportunity to do so.
Jean, thank you for the question, and I think we probably met with your daughter, if I'm not mistaken. But I would be happy to follow up on the request about the Lieutenant Governor. I don't know very much about that, but again, if you would want to drop an email to me, I'm happy to look into that piece and that request and see if there's anything we might be able to do, because it sounds like a great idea to me, and it was an absolute pleasure to meet with the two young women who were taking part in that program
They did an excellent, excellent job, and you know, always a joy to have young people in my office.
A couple other ways to go about this, too. In addition, you know, the YMCA has the youth and government program that has the YMCA youth legislature for middle school and high school students. The high school kids even get a chance to get some high school credit in government for completing a year in the youth legislature. And it also has the mock trial where kids can, you know, do court, be in courtroom and stand in front of a judge with a mock trial and learn the legal process. And of course, we have the Legislative Page program, which is an excellent program where students come in who are 14 to 16 and get to spend a week as a page in either the House or Senate and learn what the legislature does, be around the legislature, watch us on the floor, deliver messages and things like that. And, you know, they get a week out of school. They also get a little remuneration for their time. But it's an excellent way for a young person to learn about state government and who represents him or her.
Great. Thank you for that question. Again, star 3 if you've got a question for your lawmakers tonight. Next, we're going to go on to Lee, who's got a question about the Affordable Care Act. Go ahead, Lee. You're live with your state lawmakers.
Yes. Hi. Thank you. I am obviously confused about the Affordable Care Act, and my concern is that we keep our standards as far as regulations that Washington State currently has regarding their insurance program. And I'm not quite sure if how that's going to work as far as other states diluting our insurance regulations. I don't know if I'm on track with that or not, but anyway, maybe you can answer it.
Well, a lot of that obviously is what happens in Washington, D.C. with the President and the Congress vowing to eliminate the Affordable Care Act and the money that goes with it, and still not having anything proposed or in place or on paper as to what's going to replace it. You know, they're trying to take millions of Americans who have received health care under the Affordable Care Act and just throw them off, let alone, you know, children between 21 and 26 who are now covered by their parents or guardians' health insurance, and people with pre-existing conditions. You know, all that has been said is we're going to do away with it and replace it, but we have no idea what that means. So I think we're all restless and concerned, and you know, we'll do in Washington what we can in the state of Washington to hold on to our health care and to you know, do what we can to improve it. But there again, it's going to take both the House and the Senate, and I'm not sure what the Senate Republicans would feel about putting more money into health care.
Excellent. Thank you.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
The funny thing about the Affordable Care Act is it actually came out of the Heritage Foundation, which is a Republican think tank, and it went to Massachusetts where Governor Mitt Romney started it. And so the odds and dynamic right now is the Republican Party in D.C. is trying to change it, but they're having a hard time doing that, and part of their hard time might be that the idea was initially theirs.
Great. Thank you for that question. Next, we are going to go out to Scott, who's got a question about sanctuary cities. Go ahead, Scott. You're live with your lawmakers.
Yeah, first, I just want to thank everyone for holding this. I've been a resident of Olympia now for 14 years, and this is the first time I arrived home from work and received a call that I could participate in such a public forum, so I appreciate that because a lot of us are really busy. So my name's Scott Hecht, and my question is related to the recent, and I would argue likely, unconstitutional restrictions that the Trump administration has put in place for seven nation states which have, you know, really disconnected from so-called terrorism, and there's never been any terrorist person in the United States coming from those countries. And I want to know what Olympia plans on doing, and particularly you three, and if we're going to put forward that Olympia is a sanctuary place, and more importantly, that the county will do something, and also that the state may do something, recognizing the importance of all folks in our state, and how important, whether it be the west side or the east side, folks from other nationalities are to our common community. Thanks.
This is Beth. Thank you so much for raising that issue. I think it's weighing really heavily over so many of us and really coloring our days. The House and the Senate, Democratic folks here, all signed a letter. I think we had nearly unanimous signing of the letter to the Trump administration, basically saying we completely disagree with what he has done and how he's singled out seven countries, like you say. Folks coming from those countries have not committed terrorist acts in the United States, not a single incident of that. It's setting us up for a very uncertain future. There's a lot of feeling in my heart around instability and fear about what's to come based on the actions that our president has taken in just the few days that he's actually held office. So Olympia, I do believe, is a sanctuary city officially, and they are sticking with that. They're not backing down in any way based on threats from the federal government that funding might not come our way because we're holding on to that. I also want to mention that the colleges, all three colleges, St. Martin's, South Puget Sound, and Evergreen, are continuing to support undocumented students who deserve a chance in this country, just like my grandparents deserved a chance in this country to make their lives better. They're supporting that and being very supportive. They're actually, it's interesting, choosing not to become a sanctuary university, but pledging because they're not sure exactly how that will work out in the future. There's some little glitch there that they're concerned it would actually hurt them more than help protect the students, but they are pledging to do everything in their power as a public institution to support folks who are utilizing the higher institutions in our community. So hats off to our public institutions. And Lori and Sam, if you want to add to that?
The only thing I'd add is my daughter is a diplomat with the State Department, and she's an expert in the Middle East, and what she has said is the very countries that we are punishing through the executive order are the very countries that need to be our best friends right now, because they're going to help us fight terrorism. And so we're shooting ourselves in the foot with this executive order. I think a lot of us know that. As personally devastating as it's been to watch how this plays out, I have to tell you that last weekend, listening to Governor Inslee talk, listening to our Attorney General talk, and then knowing that Courtney Gregoire, who happens to be a port commissioner for the city of Seattle, was at the airport making sure that those refugees that were being put on that plane to leave were staying here and getting them an attorney to help. That was all pretty magnificent leadership on behalf of all of us in Washington State.
I'm just looking at a list here. There are 18 counties in Washington that list themselves as sanctuary counties, including Thurston County, Spokane County, King County. I know Olympia just became a sanctuary city or reinforced it. So is Seattle and a number of other places around here. So even the city of Sunnyside in eastern Washington. So it's pretty widespread, and we have to support and continue to support the people who are in this country and trying to divide and set up concentration camps, which may be Trump's next move, is just something we can't stand.
Great. Thank you for that question. Next, we are going to go out to Cindy, who has a question about College Bound. Go ahead, Cindy. You are live with your lawmakers.
Thank you so much for taking my call. Yes, I work with students, you know, getting them ready for College Bound, and I work with them all the way through high school. And so I get real nervous when I get them excited about College Bound in the seventh grade. I just want to be real sure when I'm talking to them that I can say, yes, this money will be here when you are a senior in high school. So when they fill out their FAFSA, it comes down, that it comes back to their AFC is like zero, what have you. They're eligible for the state NEET grant, and then the College Bound money will be there.
So this is Lori, and when I was the policy director for Governor Raybar, it's when we actually started the College Bound program. And then when I left that job in 2009, my husband, who is a middle school science teacher, and I went around the state to teach school districts how to sign kids up for College Bound because they didn't quite believe this was going to be true. And it's been very fun the past few years to see how our college enrollment has gone up so substantially because of these College Bound kids that we signed up back when they were in middle school a few years back. So I am totally dedicated to trying to get funding to keep College Bound in place. I think that I'm on the finance committee, and that's one of the reasons we're looking so hard for more ways to get state revenue. I keep telling people when they come to my office that we have this revenue toolbox in the state of Washington, and we take the lid off the toolbox and we look inside, and we have about three really regressive tools in there. We have sales tax, B&O tax, and some property tax. And because those are our only tools, we keep raising them, and we really need to find some other tools to add to our toolbox, and they need to be more progressive in nature so that the wealthier people in Washington can pay more of their fair share, and we're not always relying on the poorest people to pay the taxes.
Thank you for your work. This is Beth. Thank you for the work that you're doing with those, with the kids that you're working with. Such an important program. To help us close that opportunity gap when it comes to higher education. So thank you so much for your work.
Why don't you just quickly tell the other listeners, too, what we mean by what Upward Bound offers to a student who successfully gets College Bound. That's proper English.
Well, we don't have her on the line anymore. I apologize for that.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, maybe we can just edit.
I can talk about it for a minute. So, what College Bound is, it's a program with our middle school students who are oftentimes living in poverty, not doing well in school, and oftentimes no one in their family has ever attended college, so it's not in their future that they see for themselves that they would be able to attend college. So this program gets to those kids when they're in 7th and 8th grade, and what it tells them basically is that they stay in school. If they get into a college in the state of Washington or even outside of the state of Washington, and if they don't have any kind of a felony record, that the state of Washington will basically pay their tuition and buy their books for them when they go to college. We try to get them to college campuses so they can actually see what it looks like and maybe envision themselves on a college campus. Because what we know is once you get one child in a family to attend college, it changes the whole future of that family. So getting that first person in a family in college makes everything better for the rest of the history of the family. So that's why it's so important, and it really does change kids' lives.
Okay, great. Thank you, Cindy, for that question. Next, we are going to go on to Edward, who's got a question about a Representative Dolio bill about children's parks. Go ahead, Edward. You are live on the air.
Yeah. Hi, this is Ed LeClerc calling from Olympia. And I have a question about House Bill 1596 that requires manufacturers of certain consumers or children's electronic products to provide notice to the Department of Ecology. And my question is, I'm not sure what the gist of the bill is. I read the whole bill, and I think it revolves around the fact that I don't understand what a high-priority chemical is, whether it's radioactive or rare earth element or what it is, and I don't know what I should feel about that.
Well, Ed, you should, hello. It's nice to hear your voice. Thank you for calling in and asking me about this bill. When the Child Safety Act passed, which requires the manufacturers of children's toys to report the toxic chemicals in their products. So high priority chemicals are, it's a list, I think it's got 66 things on it, phthalates, that kind of thing. It just requires them to report those toxics that are in the products that they manufacture. So this bill would close a loophole. It was at the time they did not put electronics into the list of items that need to be reported on, and so we're coming back to try and get electronics put into that into the Children's Safety Act that was passed about 10 years ago now. So it's basically a reporting requirement. There is evidence of toxic chemicals within of different electronics, television, phones, those things that our children are spending way, way too much time with, that are getting airborne and finding in the dust. And we have some studies that I'm happy to send them to you tomorrow. I've got your email. I can send you the studies that show that this is getting into household dust and is being ingested into adults and children. So we just want to have a good sense. I will note, I think it's important to note that Apple has recognized this as an issue and has chosen to manufacture their products completely toxic-free. So the idea is that by having more information about what's in these products and how it might impact children's health, people might change the toxic chemicals like flame retardants, for example, that they use in their products.
Great. Thank you for that question. Next, we are going to go out to Molly, who's got a question about law enforcement. Go ahead, Molly. You're live with your state lawmakers.
Thank you. And I just want to thank all of you for being there tonight. And I, like another caller, have never been able to participate in anything like this. So I'm really excited to, listen and be able to ask you a question. And the question I have concerns House Bill 1529. I think I read that it was in committee on Monday, and it specifically addresses many things about community policing, but one of the provisions I'm interested in is it changes some of the language in regards to police use of deadly force. It makes it a more objective standard in investigations. So I was hoping that, you can weigh in on that and maybe illuminate me as to where this bill is in the process. So thank you.
Thanks, Molly, for asking the question. This is Beth again. This is an issue that the Black Alliance of Thurston County, our constituents, really brought to the fore last year. There was a bill last year that created a task force to look at community policing, to look at policing, and in particular, the statute that is on the books that basically gives police officers complete immunity from being held accountable from an act that is unlawful when using deadly force. So basically, the bill that you're talking about does change the law. We are the only state in the entire nation that we're just way off on what's in statute. In order to convict a police officer of an unlawful shooting, you have to prove malice, and good faith also enters into the equation. And so there is language that was developed by the task force and passed by the task force that that I believe both sends a signal to the community that we are changing our law and adding some accountability, while at the same time making sure that officers are protected, because of course they are going to occasionally need to, in the line of duty, unfortunately, use deadly force. And when they do that, and it's in, and of course, they need to be able to do that. And we want them to be protected in that case as well. So to get at all of this, there's a training component to the bill as well, really working with police forces on, you know, training and de-escalation, providing resources for departments to purchase less lethal weapons. So there's a whole package of things that come along with this that will help to change the culture around policing. And I think the most important thing that this has done, and I really hats off to the Black Alliance of Thurston County for bringing this issue to our state, it's creating conversation so that we can talk with our police officers, our law enforcement, about what we want our police to look, policing to look like. And people can begin to have to build their trust with police officers because really they go into those professions to protect people. And a lot of times we're not looking at it that way. So I think it's really been a good issue to start to rebuild trust between our communities and our police forces. And so I think the bill, we had a hearing in the House and in the Senate on these bills this week. I think a lot of really great testimony was had, and we'll see how we proceed forward. I do believe there's a path forward to both providing the resources for training and also making changes to the statute of the law in terms of how police officers are treated should something happen with improper use of deadly force.
All right. Next, we are going to go out to Alan, who's got a question about tobacco use for those under 21. Go ahead, Alan. You are live with your lawmakers.
I was just hoping that the senator and representatives could fill us in on the process now that Wheels of Training, Bob Ferguson, has suggested that the age limit be changed for tobacco. What will the legislature have to do to see that through?
Well, first thing we have to do is have bills to increase the age, which we do. I am a co-sponsor of the Senate bill, along with a number of other senators, to make the age 21. And, you know, I think it's a good health care measure, as well as, you know, it just makes some common sense to me. I'd like to make it 50, but I know we won't go there.
This is Lori. There's also a companion bill in the House to do the same thing. You know, the thought is even though the state would lose a little money up front on tobacco sales, that we would make a lot of money down the road on health care costs. Because my own mom passed away from lung cancer. It's a tragic way to lose your life, and it's a very expensive way to lose your life. So it would save the state a lot of money on the other end of that. And obviously, our kids would be a lot healthier if they didn't start smoking.
Excellent. Great question. Next, we're going to go out to Dorothy with education funding question. Go ahead, Dorothy. You are live on the air with your state lawmakers.
Hello to all of you. I am new to the state of Washington. I have been here for only 18 months. I'm a former teacher, and I do a lot of volunteer work with the schools. Right now I'm reading in an elementary school through the United Way Reading Buddies program, and I'm working with kids from kindergarten through third grade. On this email I have about this forum, it says, underlying all of our work is our commitment to fully fund K-12 education this year. Our children are counting on all of us. I'm, as a new resident of Washington, extremely concerned that there has been a bill or a law or something passed that guarantees funding for the schools, and yet they aren't getting the funding. And I don't understand how this can happen. I'm also concerned about how the, there's a, I believe it's a $100,000 a day fine for not meeting this requirement to fully fund education, and I'm very concerned to know how the legislature is planning to not only fund education, but pay this $100,000 a day fine that has been accruing for quite some time.
So, Dorothy, this is Lori Dolan, and your question probably requires about a 30-minute answer. So what I'm going to encourage you to do before we lose our hour here is if you would email me, again, it's lori.dolan@ledge.wa.gov. I will connect with you, and I will kind of tell you all about the Washington State Constitution that says that K-12 education, the common schools, must be fully funded. It's the paramount duty of the state. We're the only state in the United States that has that language in our state constitution. And there's a lot more to this story that I would be happy to share with you in the next couple of days.
Great. Thank you, Dorothy, for that question. Unfortunately, that is all the time we have today. I do apologize. That 1 hour does go rather quickly. So, unfortunately, if you didn't get a chance to ask your question tonight, if you just hang on the line for a couple more minutes, you will have the opportunity to leave a voicemail for Senator Sam Hunt, Representative Lori Dolan, and Representative Beth Dolio, and they will get their messages for you. Thank you again on behalf of the members for joining the call, and now I will turn it over to the members for some very brief closing remarks.
This is Lori Dolan. It's been a privilege to be with you tonight. I appreciate everyone calling in and asking us such great questions. The fun of being the representative in the 22nd District is we live right with the people we represent. I love that. So come see us, and we'll look forward to working with you.
Yeah, thank you to everyone for who joined in and listened in, and please do get in touch with us. We are only as good as the folks that we're representing and the issues that you have to hear us, and we're all three committed to being the absolute best advocates and policymakers for our district. So please keep in touch.
And sorry for constantly coughing at you, but this cold that's going around the legislature will not go away from us. I also want to thank you, and it's going to be a very, very difficult time because we have a divided government and we have a ruling party in the Senate that doesn't think we need to add money to education. So it's going to make it very difficult to meet that and other requirements. But we're here and we're committed to hang on and fight the fight, and hopefully we can get something that is a good bipartisan agreement that addresses education, higher education, and our social needs in the state. And thank you all.